Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th day of March, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes, don't get the blues. Here comes the news. Before that, first, I want to thank Dennis for stepping in. Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest. And we're always delighted and honored when Dennis can join us. But that also means that there will not be...
As per my contract.
As per his contract, there will not be any YouTube today. So, but you can, of course...
However you're envisioning me, I'm even more handsome.
He is. He truly is. It's astonishing.
We have to not look
at him in order to keep our focus on what we're doing.
We have the faces for radio.
We do. So there will not be YouTube today, but of course we're live on the air and we're streaming live over the internet. And of course you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And I will now read the news. Ta-da! The March Windows.
This just in.
The March Windows 10 update appears to be causing a blue screen of death to appear for some users.
Yes, it is.
That's what you want.
What?
That's what you want.
That's exactly what you want. There are numerous stories of people who have run into issues since installing the latest Windows 10 update. The issue seems to occur when trying to print something, though it may only affect certain printing situations. A Reddit post and ensuing thread mentioned Kyocera.
One of the K printers. Take your pick.
Exactly.
You know the one.
According to the post on Reddit, updating to a new Kyocera driver did not work. In addition to reports of issues involving Kyocera printers, people have seen the blue screen of death using Ricoh, Zebra, and other types of printers. As is the case with many issues in Windows 10, we don't know the extent of this issue yet. When the issue does occur, it can be done. It can be done by a simple everyday task: printing anything. People have run into the issue while attempting to print from Notepad, Office, and other apps. PCs don't seem to see the blue screen of death unless they are trying to print to one of the affected printers. Many people in the Reddit thread worked around the issue by uninstalling the latest Windows 10 update. That may solve this specific issue, but the update also includes several important fixes and security updates. Hopefully, Microsoft can get to the bottom of the issue quickly to remedy the situation. Microsoft has confirmed that the issue is present in several versions of Windows 10, and they have issued a workaround.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yeah. The thing is...
It's called a pencil. And
pencil and paper. First, don't print anything. I don't know why you need to do that. It says that Microsoft says that and I quote, a subset of Type 3 printer drivers are affected by this issue.
Okay.
Unquote. So if you've got a Type 3 printer driver, which we all know which type printer driver we have.
Yeah, I keep it tattooed on my wrist.
Exactly right.
Evidently, I have one.
Right. Apparently you do,
so
yes.
We'll have to figure this out and let our listeners know once we figure it out.
Well, you can tell if you have the print management console installed.
Okay.
You can load that. Of course, you do it from the run box. You do it from a command prompt.
Command prompt, right. Which everybody's super comfortable with.
And the command, as everybody knows, is printmanagement.msc.
Yes.
And then you expand the print server, select printers, and the driver type for each printer is then displayed.
Okay.
Or you could just try to print something. If you get a blue screen of death, you've got a Type 3 printer.
Hey, is this gun loaded?
And then if you want to... mitigate this issue, there's a different set of instructions, a four-step process for 32-bit drivers on the 64-bit version of Windows.
Okay.
a different six-step process, and step six has eight sub-steps.
Of course.
For the 32-bit drivers on 34-bit Windows or 64-bit drivers on 64-bit Windows.
Right.
And Microsoft did say they're planning to release a fix.
You didn't really want to print this badly, did you?
In the coming week, right. So I have that workaround, and I will post that on the website. It's also in our forums under polls, under the poll of the week. And in fact, our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is latest Windows update, blue screens when printing. Your choices are, yep, it happened to me, hasn't happened to me yet, who even prints anymore? Windows, and other. So far, we have 28 votes in the poll. I want to thank everybody.
Already?
Who went.
Wow.
We did over 100 last week, and I'm hoping we can beat that this week.
Tell your friends.
Tell your friends. Tell your enemies. Telephone, everything. We have 28 votes so far, and Windows is ahead with what happened. It hasn't happened to me yet. Right behind. Yep, happened to me. That must be Dave. and other. And, of course, if you said other, head on over to our website at soundbites.org. Scroll down on the right under Fascinating Stuff. You will see the forum. Second forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least the number one item under poll discussion is 13 Mark 21, latest Windows update blue screens when printing. And that's where you will see a link. One of our people posted. I should probably go there. And
yeah, I saw a link in after the fact. That you can go in and actually, there's folks putting in there that if they just want to get rid of the update.
Okay. And that's doable, but the problem with that remains, if you do that, you will be uninstalling some very much needed security patches that are being actively exploited in the wild. So we here at Soundbites do not recommend that you uninstall the update.
Right.
What we recommend is that... yeah, it was Racer Bob. He's the third or fourth one down.
Is that a reference to Ranger Bob?
Fifth one down, probably.
Racer Call Bob. In if you remember
or
Ranger
Microsoft Bob.
Bob.
Could be Microsoft Bob.
It could be.
Has published a workaround. More importantly, so you can go there. It's the GHEX link that I have. So, oh no, I've got the GHEX. It's the GHEX link. So you can see it there, or I'll post it at the break. Again, we do not recommend that you uninstall.
Yep, work this through with your printer, and you'll get your printing back.
Right, because like I said, those security fixes are being actively exploited in the wild, and you know people are always saying, well, nobody's going to hack me. It's a robot that's doing the hacking. They don't care who they hack. They will grab anybody.
Right.
Anything from anybody. So we do not recommend you uninstall the updates. We recommend you do the fix, which is much more painful, but still, there you have it. And, of course, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Just like Andy did from Greece, New York. Hi, Andy. What's up?
Hey, Nick. Welcome back, Dave.
Thank you.
The Windows update. I was calling, and I think you just answered my question, but is it by any chance 20H2?
It's many of them. It's many versions of Windows.
Okay, but all right, I'll backtrack. I logged down to do something, and I get a notification in the window that comes up and tells me that my Windows is reaching its end of service, and I need to update. And so I went and I clicked on it to get more information before I did the update, and it said, this update is version 20H2.
Okay.
It's kind of a different, I hadn't seen that nomenclature used before for a Windows update, but my immediate thought was, okay, is this one of these little suckers that's going to blue screen or brick my computer? Or has it got problems or whatever? So I figured I'd get on quick and give you guys a call and see if you'd heard anything. Sounds like you have, and it sounds like I need to wait till later this week to once they put the fix out.
Right. 20H2 was released in September of 2020.
Okay.
The 20 okay. is the year. Nobody okay. knows what the H2 means.
Second half?
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's say
second
that.
Hand. Yeah, it's the second hand 2020. But yeah, so.
Update assistant will prompt you to right. to update. And they've been doing that for a while. You know, previous versions have had that as well. 1507, 1511, 1607, 1703, 1709, 1803 have all had that.
Usually they just install. This one actually asked me if I wanted to.
Right.
So that was kind of different behavior.
Well, the reality is that generally you only see that if you've already paused a bunch of stuff. But the fact okay. is that when a version of Windows reaches its end of life, it no longer gets certain updates, mostly security updates. And so you do want to make sure that you have the latest versions. But in terms of 2020 H2, again, you're right. If you wait a week, theoretically, Microsoft will have fixed the printing issue. Which only, okay. you know, it depends on what printer you have. Generally, HPs don't seem to be a problem, or yeah, Canon or Brother.
I've got an HP and a Brother, and we had discussed a previous printing problem I was having with my spooler, and that somehow, miraculously, and I have no idea why, went away.
Yeah, I don't know.
And we had thought it was because of an older version of software I was using, but all of a sudden it just disappeared a couple weeks ago, and it hasn't happened. And I've been waiting for it to happen, and it hasn't. That's kind of like, okay, I wonder what happened. Oh, well, Harry Potter was by and waved his wand, and that's fine. And so I haven't been looking for trouble. I haven't gone, you know, it hasn't been broken, so I haven't been trying to fix it. But then this update shows up, and I figured, it's time to call Nick and the guys and see what it is.
Yeah, wait the week, but you know, once Microsoft has the printing issue fixed, you really should update, because like I said, there are yeah. active exploits in the wild that are being used right now. And
unfortunately, this is a computer I don't run all the time. I'm on my Chromebook far more than I'm on my Windows box. So,
right.
And since the bills for the month are all paid, I can let it sit for a week and not really even turn it on.
Well, that makes sense then. You're good. Okay, thanks.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, it's Microsoft has been having a year with updates, haven't they? Jeez and crackers. That's one of the reasons they're talking about making everything happen in the Azure cloud.
Right.
And making your Windows box just a dumb terminal.
Hmm. What's old is new again.
What's old is new again. And the idea is that once it's up there, they can much better control what's going on. Also, they can make their own updates.
Right.
And so when they do that, there's less of a chance that you'll get hacked. Not no chance. It's still Windows. But there's less of a chance that you'll get hacked.
Yes. Well, or everybody will get hacked all at once.
Or everybody's hacked at the same time. Exactly right. So
eggs meat basket.
Yeah. So that's what they're planning on, and again, that's what they've told their investors. They can certainly change that plan, but generally, you don't lie to the investors.
Yeah, there's yeah. a whole bunch of rules.
Yeah, you can. Yeah, right. You don't lie to them because they will take their money back.
Yep.
And B, you don't lie to them because the government frowns on that.
Yeah. Yeah, they give you a new outfit to wear.
Exactly.
It's all
right.
Orange.
So that's what they've said. They've been saying it for a while, and I can understand it would take forever to make happen. But that's what they've said, and you don't lie to the investors.
Oh, one thing I got to start playing around with is I had another Raspberry Pi 3 laying around.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Put Raspbian on it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yep. Raspbian is the...
That is so cool.
Yeah, I love Raspbian. It's what I'm generally
Well, I wound up putting on this because I was looking...
Let's roll back just half a step. Raspbian is the open source OS that you can run on a Raspberry Pi, which is like it's an integrated computer about the size of a credit card that you can.
Oh, we've been talking about Raspberry Pis.
Yep.
Oh, I've got two Windows Raspberry Pi 4s.
Okay.
I'm running Windows on ARM on Windows ARM yes. on both of them.
Right.
Hooked up to SSD hard drives.
Okay.
And they are fast. Well, I had to replace my server. My server was 15 plus years old.
Okay. It was due.
Yeah. So I put a 2 gig, a 2 terabyte.
I think you could have gotten another 5 years out of it, frankly.
A 2 terabyte hard drive on one of them. and I'm using that now as my file server. And that thing is fast. I love it.
I did the same on a Raspbian Raspberry Pi, and it's just, it flies.
Well, that's what I'm doing now. I just put Raspbian on this other, just a Pi 3, just to play around with it, because I was seeing all these, like, they call them the gray line clocks. And what it is it's the globe. It looks like the globe. And they've got and they track the satellites, and they can show you different things that are going on, and all stuff relative to ham radio.
Ham radio, yeah.
Yeah. So I was looking at the price of them.
Yeah.
And they were fudging $400 to $500 for these things. I go, no way.
Right.
So I went into Raspberry.
Right.
And looked around, and they said, oh, yeah, here, if you want one of these, here's the code and everything else. Here's what you got to do. So followed a couple YouTube videos. I just had to download one thing, flash it to the drive, put it on the card. Boom. Now I got one of these clocks up on a 24-inch
screen. And what it cost you was, in reality, it cost you a Raspberry Pi and a micro SD card.
And that's which it. Which I already had.
So it cost you nothing.
So that was, you know, here it was taking up the whole screen. And I go, I don't want to eat it up the whole room. This other guy wound up coming up with a routine that puts it in a window.
Yep.
So now I just click it. There it is up in a window, and I can play around with the rest of the things on Raspberry.
Right.
Raspbian. And like you say, Dennis, that is really good.
It's basically Linux.
Yeah.
And I have two. A 3 and a 4,
mm-hmm.
and another 3 that I haven't set up yet.
Okay.
I'm going to the dark side on this.
You really are. Oh. I'm telling you, and updating is a matter of sudo apt update,
yeah.
sudo apt upgrade,
yeah.
and you're done.
Done. Yeah. Right. Oh, yeah, I'm getting pretty good at sudo, because they even have a, there with the Raspberry, and you just click on it, and it opens up the sudo, you know, the window, the SSH window. That you can do all your sudo code and everything else, and boom.
Right. I mostly use command line. I've also got our desktop running on them, so I can actually open the actual desktop. So I don't even have screens on them.
Okay, so they're just little headless terminals that connect to.
Right. They're basically like what Windows is going to be.
Yeah.
Well, I've got it on one. I've got a 7-inch touchscreen.
Oh, okay.
So it's really nice.
Right, for that, right. It's very nice.
It's perfect for the server. They go, well, it's so small. Doesn't matter. I can go over to a section, and just like your phone, spread your, you know, do the with the fingers, and it zooms right on in, yeah. and I can sit there. Because basically, it just sits there. That's why I put the screen into sleep mode. But for the most part, it's just sitting there acting as a file server. So it's only once in a while when I got to go in there. You know, if I want to create another folder or whatever, but even a lot of that I can do offline. But.
I've got an original Pi, and I installed an app called Pi Hole.
Oh, yes.
It's a black hole for you run your own domain name service on
right.
it. And then you can download a list of commonly used domains that are ad trafficking.
Right.
You know, they're ad servers. And then you tell Pi Hole, if you get a request for these, don't fulfill that request. So what do you end up with? Well, when your computer is using the Pi Hole as its DNS or domain name service server, it means that you don't get the ads while you're web browsing the same way that you would, which can really help speed things up because you're not waiting for the ads to download, you're not waiting for them to display. It's an interesting way to see. Just how much of the traffic that you have going across the internet from your house is truly ad-related.
Yep.
And Pi Hole will make fancy, pretty, colorful graphs to show you all the different places that all the different devices in your house have been trying to go. You know, maybe you've got a smart TV and you wonder, where is this trying to go? Pi Hole will tell you. It tried to connect to this thing 13 times last night while you were sleeping.
Yep. Let me tell you something, in all honesty. I was a systems administrator and managed a whole bunch of people for 20 years. So I can say, in all honesty, executives are dumb. And what we love is graphs.
Oh, yeah.
Because instead of getting a page and a half of verbiage, show me a graph.
Yes, with a line that's either moving up and to the right Or down into the right.
Depending on which way you want it to go.
That's right.
Exactly right. And then give me bullet points.
Executive summary, you would say.
Exactly right. and that's why it's an executive summary. Executives are dumb, and they prefer that stuff. Actually, of course, what they are is busy.
Yes.
If you're going to write to us, it's Steve Ray at soundbites.org.
I can tell you, listeners, that his tongue is planted firmly in his cheek as he says these things.
So if you have the ability to see graphs, everybody loves them.
Yes.
From the very beginning of my career, I have to say, I used to keep graphs of everything I did, number of calls I took, mm-hmm. When I was on help desk and everything else. So every year when we had budget time, I would hand in and say, over the months, this is how everything has grown and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
And so I need a new computer. I always got one every single year.
Right.
Other people did not because they couldn't justify it. And I would say just
Even if they could justify it, they weren't documenting it.
They weren't documenting it.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I'd say just make the graphs. It's not that hard.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But what it would require is keeping tabs all year long.
Yes. It's the consistency.
Right.
You're being rewarded for your consistency.
Right. And so, I say this, and I hope none of my old bosses are listening. But
you're retired now. What can they do?
Exactly.
Yeah, really.
The reality is that if you want something out of a boss, give them a graph.
Yeah.
You're way more likely to get it.
The pictures will do it all the time.
Exactly right. If you can give them a cartoon, that's best. But if you can't, a graph is second.
Yeah, but like you said, just the graph with a few bullet points. Keeping it simple. You don't overload them with information. Just what they need to know to prove your point and everything else and justify it. Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. Then they feel solid in, agreeing with you or backing you in your decision.
Anytime you can make the decision easier for people who work above you.
Yes.
That's
a way to win. And they appreciate that. The truth is, and I'll be honest now, the truth is that management appreciates that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you've had people work for you.
Yes.
You know,
and
you've
I appreciate
been on both sides.
It, and they treated me as stupid. And I appreciate it. Because when you can see that kind of stuff, it is easier for you to make the decision.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that decision is simply good job, keep doing what you're doing, or oh, you're right, we need to go here, or whatever it happens to be. The fact is that making my life easier was better for them.
Yes. Well, and you get to share that same graph with the people above you.
Yep. Exactly.
And,
right.
To justify it.
And
too.
I did. I always did.
I call it giving my boss the ammo that she needs, right?
Right. Exactly right. And so, there's nothing like a good chart, nothing like a good graph.
That's right.
All right. Are we doing a thing?
Ooh.
Yeah, all right. I couldn't hear that. We're
going to
take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. We got 35 votes in the poll. Please vote. We'd love to see that break 100 again. And we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with the longest-running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Sorry, I was enjoying the music. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
Sit down. We got a show to do. Stop dancing.
That's right. Nobody can see me. I'm dancing on the table, everybody.
That gets me, though.
My drink.
He plays Otto does an Italian show, and he plays polka music.
Right. It's North Italy.
Right.
Very northern, mountainous area.
Right. So again, I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave.
And I'm still Dennis Worcester.
Still?
Believe it. Yep.
And
true.
37 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, and we have Larry from Rochester, New York on the line. Hi, Larry. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys.
Hello.
I've got my Pi 4 up and going, and I've attached 3 sensors to it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm now able to do air quality, CO2, that kind of thing. So that's my first project.
Nice.
However, like you, I spent a career at Xerox in research, and while a stream of graphic numbers is okay, I like plots.
Of course.
Tell me what's going on instantly. I have now been searching for Python code that might not be too difficult at my level that I could hack around in and figure out how to plot the sensor data coming in real time as well as save it. And I was wondering if you might have any pointers in that direction.
There are a number of Python plotting libraries. If you're only looking for 2D, you might try matplotlib, M-A-T-P-L-O-T-L-I-B, of course, all one word.
I'm sorry, I should have had my pencil in my hand. If you don't mind saying that just once more, please.
Sure, it's called matplotlib.
Uh-huh.
M-A-T-P-L-O-T-L-I-B, all one word.
Okay.
There's also one called Plotly, but I think that's web-based, I think.
Probably.
And then there's one called Seaborn, which is also based on matplotlib. Then there's ggplot, then there's Altair. So you've got...
You got a few to pick from.
You got a lot of choices. My suggestion would be probably the best thing to do is to go to Google, say Python plotting libraries, and take a look at the various choices. Most of them have sample code, and you can pick the one that's easiest for you.
Okay.
And what I would suggest, as I learned doing my, is get an extra SSD card.
Okay.
Make a copy of your current system.
Oh, yeah.
Set that aside in case you go in there and start doing some stuff and it mucks everything back up.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Okay, good.
That way you can always put back and be at the point that you started before you start playing around.
Yeah.
And in addition, never forget that even Raspberry Pis need to be backed up.
Yep.
Right.
Again, your data at the very least. And particularly if you're going to start writing Python code, the last thing you want to do is have to recreate something.
Okay. Okay. Now, I could any old SSD drive would be, well, probably the best you can afford, but all I need to do is pick it up, hook it up to a USB 3 port.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I did. I bought an enclosure for I think it was $20. $15 on Amazon that fit. It's a spinning drive, so it's an old and slightly slow one, but
it's
a 2-terabyte drive and it works. It's a SATA 3. I plugged it into the USB 3, and it's fast and easy. And I mounted it through the GUI. And it's done, and it just sits there.
Or you could also just back it up to a flash drive.
Sure.
If you got a flash drive, just put it up to the flash drive, because you can, you know, then take that flash drive and then flash it to as many different SSD cards as you want to do backups.
Mm, okay, well, I've got lots of flash drives.
There you go. You can back it up to that.
Okay. Well, that'll get me going for another week. My wife says I'm obsessed now, so... Well,
oh, I know the feeling. It was fun playing around with that.
I don't know if it's fun, but I refuse to be defeated.
There you go.
That's the fun of it.
It keeps you off the streets, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
That's just
a public service, really.
Yeah. Off the streets and out of the bars.
That's right.
Okay, well, thank you, guys. I'll continue to listen. Okay.
Thanks, Larry.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, okay. As long as your wife knows where you are, you know?
That's right. So
she hears the cussing.
Yeah, exactly. That's why they call it a cursor. My wife is said, I love the fact that you're home and on a different floor.
Yeah.
Same here. I'm up in my own ham room.
It's been like a year at my house. We live in a ranch. We only have the one floor.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You can go to the far end of the house or down to the basement.
You know, I've completely redone the basement recently. So, yes, there's been a little bit of discussion of that.
Yeah, there you go.
It's either that or you need to go to work.
Yeah, right.
You need
to
go back into the office.
I love having you home, but I don't like having you in this room.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly. No, I get it. I absolutely get it.
Well, everybody who comes to our house makes us smile. Some people when they appear, and some people when they leave.
All right. We did get a text from Jerry from Daytona, Florida. Would you read that, please?
It's 95 degrees here. Ha, ha, ha.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
Now, Jerry, this time in Dayton, Florida, Daytona, Florida beach. Ask, I have a MacBook Air with USB 3. USB 3 ports. Sometimes when I plug a USB 3 flash drive into a file transfer really slows down. What can be going wrong with this? Thanks. Then he also added MacBook Air 11-inch from 2014 Catalina, and yes, it uses USB 3 on the Apple spec sheet.
Okay. Well, I've done a little bit of research while everybody else was listening to In the Mood. We were surveying what we could think of for potential answers here, and my research has led to that when you are transferring things, the other processes that are happening behind the scenes, include that the Spotlight service is indexing the drive in order to enhance your searchability of the files on the drive. And it is at the same time that the copy is happening, the Spotlight service is going and checking on the other files that you've already copied over. And both of those processes kind of deadlock. They don't deadlock. They compete for the resources of being able to read to and write from the drive. And that's going to make your transfers feel much, much slower. Now, here's the fix. If you go into the system preferences on your Mac, you can go to the Spotlight preference pane, and there is a tab there called Privacy. And Privacy tells Apple, please don't index this particular drive. I don't want you to return results when I search for things. You can add your flash drive to that list, and at that point, it will throw out the index, and it will not recreate the index, which means that any of the copies you do should run at a much faster speed.
Also, it means that you're saving storage space on your drive.
Sure, because you're not writing the index there.
Right.
So,
and you also said it could also be slow because it's not...
Not be formatted correctly. Many flash drives...
it may not be formatted correctly for the Mac.
Yes, right.
Right. If it's a thing you also use in Windows or something else...
Then NTFS would be a good choice. The most common way to get a flash drive out of the box would be formatted FAT or NTFS, possibly if it's a much larger capacity drive. If you are a Apple-only kind of person, you'll want to reformat this using Disk Utility and format it as APFS. You can also format it if you need to connect to older machines. You can format it as HFS extended. But APFS is the modern way to format flash drives and disks for macOS.
And you do that how again?
With that, to do the formatting, you'd go into an application called Disk Utility, which lives in the utility folder, and the utility folder lives in your applications folder. And you can pick the flash drive from the left column, and then at the top you can choose erase, and it will give you options about how to format it. And APFS is the one you want to choose.
And if it's a brand new drive, that's okay. But if it's a drive you've already been using, it does erase everything that's on it.
That is a destructive operation.
So back up anything that you might want.
Yep.
Down the road.
Copy anything that you care about somewhere else first, then do the formatting, then recopy it over and do that privacy bit too. And I bet your transfer speeds are going to go way up.
Yep. Okay. Excellent.
Right. We got another question here. In closing a tab on an Android phone, is it the same as closing the app or closing the browser for security reasons? Thanks.
Not exactly. With most Android phones, it gets a little delicate.
Yeah.
If you swipe up from the bottom, you'll get a list of all your apps. But if you swipe up from just above the bottom a little bit, you'll see all the open apps. Each of those open apps, you can then swipe up
and close the app. Yep. Okay.
So
what about for tabs?
Right. So basically, Android works like a Mac.
Okay.
Closing a window doesn't close the application.
Mm-hmm.
So you often see when people have Macs, my thing is so slow, blah, blah, blah. Well, you've got 12 open applications. No, right. I don't. Yeah, you do.
Let me show you.
It's like a TSR.
Right.
Similar, yeah.
Well, basically, you're still running the program. You just don't have an open
it's
window.
It's still running down on the desktop.
Right. So naturally, when you do that, you haven't really closed anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes up a little bit of RAM, and it takes up processor.
Sure.
So both on Macs and on Android, and I'm assuming on iPhones as well, when you close a window, like our texter says, closing a tab on a browser on an Android phone,
right,
does not actually close the application. So you can do that minor swipe up and see the open apps and close them. And similarly, on a Mac, if you alt or splat tab,
right,
you'll see all the open apps, even if you can't see their windows.
So let's say you had your browser running on your Android phone.
Yeah.
And you were looking at the web version of Gmail.
Sure.
Or something else. And you were concerned because there's some secret info in that mailbox that you don't want anybody else to see.
Right.
And you may be handing off your phone to someone, and you just don't want there to be any chance that they're going to see, because you bought them a really nice present.
Sure.
And you don't want them to hear about it.
Exactly,
or see. You know, and their birthday's coming up. So if you were to take your tab that had Gmail open and close that tab.
Yeah, because it tells you the
phone. Would there be any way for them to reopen that tab or
sure,
to see
they can do that?
That
minor swipe up, and there it is.
Okay, even though you've closed the tab.
Because the tab is still in history, so you can open up the history.
I thought if in the history it'll tell you how many tabs you have open. You have to go to that whole list and hit the little X in the upper right-hand corner
close each of those.
Because it keeps, like you said, it keeps a history of how many different places.
Sanitize that a bit.
Also, by the way, you've reminded me of something by saying it's a gift. Those of you who have an Amazon Echo.
Yes.
And buy something for another member of the household through mm-hmm. Amazon.
Yes.
You can check it's a gift.
Right.
And then the Echo will not say.
Oh, orange ring.
You get the orange ring and you say, what's my announcement or whatever.
Yes.
Whatever the
it
thing
says,
is.
Your blah, blah, blah.
It's right. It will not
step.
Say your air fryer has arrived.
Ooh.
It will say your Amazon order has arrived.
Okay. Anonymizes it a bit.
Right.
Very good.
Right.
Good to know.
That's good to know.
Clever.
One other thing we should mention.
Should we?
Is folks have to remember daylight savings time this weekend. Tonight, we spring forward, folks.
Boing.
So don't forget to move your clocks ahead 1 hour. Your computers and your phones, for the most part, should do it. But there's always those other devices that you got to go
your
around.
Microwave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Wall clocks.
In our case, it's a microwave and a couple of wall or desk clocks.
Yeah.
Well, I've got my grandfather clock that I have to sit there. Right. That's easy to. It's always easy.
Easy to go 1 hour ahead.
But yeah, then going back, I have to sit there and grab the pendulum.
It takes 30 seconds.
And stop it.
Right.
Right.
And then I set an egg timer for 60 minutes so that I can.
Or you just go 11 hours ahead.
That's what I do with my cuckoo clock.
Yeah, no, because mine chimes every 15.
Oh, all right. You don't have a switch to turn that
15,
off?
No.
No.
No, mine has, matter of fact, a setting for, I think there's 5 different chime sets that I can do.
Wow. And turning them off isn't an option?
Not that I remember.
Okay.
But he'll be looking after the show today.
I built it so many years ago.
Right.
Oh, you didn't mention that.
Yeah, I built this grandfather clock
was it a kit?
Literally, the only thing that isn't handmade is the actual
movement.
Guts of the clock.
Yeah.
But otherwise, the whole tower, the facing, the arched door and everything else. I did that in my...
How nice.
My father-in-law did the same thing. The only things are the basic central mechanism and the hands.
Yep.
Because he saw a set online that he really, really liked.
Right.
So he just bought them. Everything else, including all the wheels, the escapement... Everything he built himself.
Oh, that's incredible.
Well, I even modified the sides. They wanted the sides to be wood.
Sure.
And I go, yeah, no. I wound up making it so I could put glass in on the side. So you can see it from, the front and
the pendulum and the weights, of course, he didn't make. He bought. Yeah. Yeah. But other than that, everything.
Well, that's what I call the guts.
Including all the wheels.
Yeah.
All the gears.
Right.
The whole movement. He created that by hand. And, of course, then spent the next 5 years remaking the escapement over and over and over again.
When I got the cuckoo clock from my wife's grandmother, Kelly's, my wife's grandfather passed away, and they were giving away some items, and this was one of the things that she always liked and remembered from their house, and I thought it was really, really cool. Because it's entirely not electronic. It's entirely analog. It's driven by gravity, so right. It'll work at any point as long as we've got gravity.
Right.
Which is, you know, gravity's had a pretty good track record. So
far.
It should be around for a while. But I had to try and get I wanted it to keep better time. So I downloaded an app that actually listens to the tick and the tock, and it can tell, do you have your clock level? And do you have the weight at the right spot on the pendulum?
Yeah, you got to adjust there up or down as far as the weight,
right?
To make sure that it gets the right movement.
So you put your phone on the wall, and the microphone listens to the tick and the tock, and it can tell if you've got it level because the tick and the tock will be evenly spaced apart, right. And it will tell if they are happening too fast or too slow compared to real time. And of course, your phone is super super precise,
right?
So it gives it down to like the third or fourth decimal place of a second. And it says, no, you need to move it down this far. You need to move it up this far. And it gives you red and green about where the things are going. And that was a fun little project for a weekend. And now it keeps pretty good time.
There you go.
Yeah, I had to do the same with mine, you know, as far as the pendulum.
Yeah. Sure.
There's a little screw at the bottom. And
right. Just
moving that up or down.
They, it doesn't take much.
Well, it came from the factory pretty well set. I only had to make, I think, possibly two adjustments max. Because they gave me the instructions, you know, they say only do quarter turns.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't take much.
No, it's true.
To, you know, adjust it. So I think, I had to make one or two adjustments. And then they gave it this little tip, plastic tip, that once you put it back on there, put it back on there so then it doesn't move.
Uh-huh.
And so you don't screw around with it is what they really mean.
Yeah. They know me too well.
Right. Oh, before I forget, I will say this again after the break, but before I forget, you can join us tomorrow night in the Soundbites Lounge. Go to soundbites.org/lounge.
Cool.
From 9 to 10 o'clock, we'll be holding a video chat, and anybody who wants to ask a question can do so in there, again, from 9 to 10. It's open to everybody who listens to this show or who knows somebody who listens to this show or knows somebody who knows somebody, and you get the idea. So join us there tomorrow night from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time, and we will be doing that there. So that'll be kind of fun.
Yeah, that'd be great.
We usually get an hour long, 9 to 10.
Past my bedtime.
Past your bedtime, but for the rest of us, we're
there. That are retired.
Right. Right. My bedtime is 2 a.m. generally. I was in bed at midnight last night.
What?
I don't know what happened. I truly don't know what happened.
Mm-hmm. Worn yourself off out with all those.
Yeah, really.
I was in bed at midnight, and I got up like at 8:30 or some silly number like that this morning. I just slept like a log.
You must. Well, you
slept
must
like
have
a
needed.
Baby. Woke up every 4 hours wanting to breastfeed. Never mind. That's a separate show.
Something was in your pants.
Yeah, exactly. I slept hard last night too. I don't know why.
Hey.
Well, we got a quick another quick question that came in. We can
That's
do this
in.
Before the break. It says, I'm using Google DNS. What is the difference between difference to open DNS? Is one better than the other?
Okay.
Not really.
They're both selling your stuff.
Both selling your stuff. The basic idea, of course, a domain name service is when...
It's like a phone book.
It's like a phone book. It's a phone book of the internet.
If you remember phone books.
And the faster your DNS is, the slightly faster your system will respond to requests to go somewhere. And Google's is very, very fast. Google's is 8.8.8.8. And 8.8.4.4, those are the two DNS servers for Google. And pretty much all of them are fairly much the same. Six of one, half a dozen of the other.
Open DNS gets you some phishing and botnet protection, some web filtering.
A little bit, yeah.
That you can subscribe to. I think they've got a couple different flavors of service.
Right. But they're in the free version, they're pretty much the same.
Yeah, I don't think there's a heck of a lot of difference.
No. And you can download all kinds of apps that will tell you what's the fastest DNS on your network. Big deal.
Yeah.
A tenth of a, 3 milliseconds here, 4 milliseconds there.
But the thing to know is any time that you are not using your ISP's DNS server, you're using some third-party DNS, they're keeping track of what you are requesting. So right. If you're requesting www.google.com, they're going to notice that. If you're looking for Amazon, they're going to notice that too. If you're going to any of your favorite retailers' websites, they're going to know that. Are they going to link that to you and then sell it to somebody else, that information? It's very possible. Read those big long terms of service to find out more.
Right. And it's not just Google that does that. It's all of them.
Yeah.
Well, I think YouTube lately, I don't know what's going on there, but YouTube seems to be, if I'm watching certain YouTube videos that I subscribe to, now all of a sudden they're popping in more and more commercials.
Yeah, it's true.
In between them.
Remind me after the break to talk about that, because there's a couple of apps you can run that fix that.
Oh, interesting.
Fix much of that.
I've almost...
What a pain in the butt. It's like they get going, they're talking about something, and all of a sudden... commercial, one of those break-ins happen for it. And it's like, really?
Sponsor blocks, they're called.
Right.
In Google, in YouTube speak.
Now, can you block those in the middle?
Well, oh, yes.
We'll hit that after the break, I guess.
Yes, we will get that after the break. But we are going to take a break. We're done with the entire first hour of this show. But, holy cow, your torment is not over yet. There will be an entire another hour of this show coming along. After this slightly longer break, we'll be back with a whole lot more Dave Enright, a whole lot more Dennis Worster, and way too much Nick Francesco on the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. And let me point that out a little bit, if I may. We are member-supported, and I want to thank each and every person who's become a member, because without you, we would not be here. That is a simple, true fact. And we want to thank each and every one of you for your generosity, your kindness, and your loyalty for keeping this show on the air for 30-plus years. It's you folks who did it. We'll be back in just a few moments with a whole lot more Soundbites. 59 minutes after the hour, Soundbites member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece, Rochester. A public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901Jazz.
Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worster.
And it's 6 minutes after the hour. We are Soundbites. Again, for those of you who are just tuning in, Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest, so no YouTube today. But we have Dennis, which always makes us happy to have Dennis here.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
So that works out nicely. Before the break, I said I was going to talk about how to block ads on YouTube.
Yeah, YouTube seems to be getting more and more of them.
More and more ads. There are two things I use that blocks ads.
Yes, sir.
The pre and post ads I block with MuBlock. Or uBlock, as they now call it. UBLOCK. uBlock Origin is actually the name of the product. uBlock Origin. And that blocks many ads, as a matter of fact. And that's great.
uBlock.
But there are, uBlock Origin.
.org. Okay.
.org. uBlock Origin.org. There is another product, which is also an add-in to your browser. Called Sponsor Block. And those interstitial ads are, for example, somebody will say, today's video is sponsored by Yabombadunga. Uh-huh. And then you hear a 2-minute ad for Yabombadunga before they go back to whatever.
Right.
Those, one of the things I really love about Sponsor Block is that it is crowdsourced.
Oh.
So if you're the first person to see a video, you'll see it.
Soundbites.
But you can say, oh, the sponsor block starts here and ends here. And when enough people see that, it starts to block it.
Well, that's interesting.
It skips it, essentially, is what it does.
Right.
So you'll actually see, and this is they've added this recently, which I really like, is they've made it so that when you see the time of a YouTube video, how long it takes,
right,
in parentheses is a second time without the sponsorships.
Streamlines it a bit, doesn't it?
Right. And so you see that line across the bottom with the little red line that goes across?
Right.
There are green sections that are cut out.
Okay.
So if you skip ahead using the right arrow,
yes,
into a green section, it will play.
Okay.
But if you don't, it will skip over it. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Gonna have to try that out because, yeah, like I say, I watch a couple of YouTube videos that I subscribe to, and all of a sudden, now it's like, man, there's so many breaks in the middle, you know, going through it that there wasn't before. And it's like, this is...
Well, look, people need to make money, and it's harder and harder to make money just with YouTube videos. So people get sponsorships, and those sponsorships are valuable to them. And frankly, you know, if you want to keep your people working, then maybe you do want to watch those ads once in a while. But you can block them with Sponsor Block, and you block Origin. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brighton, New York. Hiya, Tom. What's up?
Yeah, hi. So I got a new Samsung portable SSD for my son's Macintosh because he was running out of room in his current with his current drive. So it's a question of what the right approach is. Should he copy his files just to the drive, or should he clone those the hard drive that's in his machine right now?
Well, is he planning on replacing the current drive with the SSD?
He wants to continue using the internal drive. It's a MacBook Air that he's got.
Okay.
He wants to continue using that drive, but he would like a faster boot, so he'd like to be able to boot from this SSD and then just use the internal drive as just data storage.
Okay. Well, depending upon how old the MacBook Air is, the very, very first version I don't think had flash storage, but everything since then has had flash storage, which is about as fast as an SSD. That being said, SSDs, as they get more and more full, will slow down, especially if you get way above 90% full. What I can recommend is taking that external drive and copying files that you don't use as often, or larger files, video, audio files, things of that nature, over to the external drive. Then the important things that you care about will be there. You can boot from the external drive if you install macOS to it. That's possible, but it's unlikely that you'll see a significant performance increase with respect to startup.
Okay.
Right.
Because the internal drive is should be on par performance-wise.
Yeah.
If it has enough free space.
This is a 2017.
Okay, so it's pretty recent. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, the MacBook Air, it came default with either 128 or 256 or 512 gigs of storage. Yeah. And for many people, that's okay. The 128 is pretty tight for space. Another thing you can do is take a little time and see if there are things that can be removed from the disk. And one of the tools that I like to use for this is a free tool that's called Grand Perspective. You can download that for free and run it. It's not very big. What Grand Perspective does is it shows you graphically where your big files are. So it scans the drive. It makes a little square for each file. And the bigger the square, the bigger the file. You can click on the squares and see which of the files that you have on your disk are taking up a disproportionate amount of space. And many of the people that I work with who have used this tool immediately say, oh, wait a minute, I didn't even know that was on there. And this gives them a chance to either move it somewhere else or to delete it. And that can help free up space and improve performance.
Okay.
Grand Perspective is the one that I like. There are several others. There's another one called Daisy Disk that's available that does a similar type of thing, with a different type of display.
But is it all free?
Yep, that's. I believe DaisyDisk has a trial version. I haven't used that one as much, but Grand Perspective is the one that I've used the most.
And it's free.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So another question about this drive. I was going through some of the rather terse instructions and data that Samsung gives with it. And they warn you about using passwords. If you use a password and for some reason you lose it, whatever, or forget it, you're basically locked out of that drive forever.
Yep.
No way to get the data. So is it a good idea to use a password? I don't think he's too concerned about, you know, protecting his data in that respect.
Right. It's become common to offer people the ability to encrypt their data. That means to scramble it as it's stored on the drive. And if you supply the right credentials, in this case it's a physical password that you type in, then your computer can decrypt that information and present it to you so you can read it. But many people are not so concerned. They're much more concerned about forgetting the password than they are about losing the data or someone else seeing it. So in terms of security, they kind of trade off the security part of it for convenience of being able to read it and not having to remember that password.
A lot of people
in general,
I know,
it may be overkill for your needs.
Right. A lot of people use that sort of thing for shared housing situations, dorms, that sort of thing.
Right.
And particularly I know a lot of students do it because as they're writing papers, they don't want somebody to steal their paper.
Right. So unless your son has agreements with like the Department of Energy or other government institutions that might require this, or he's storing medical data or student data for other students, chances are good he's not legally bound to encrypt the data. So I would say in general, that's probably overkill for the vast majority.
Also, encrypting your data will slow it down a little, will slow down access a little bit. Every time it's saved or every time it's read, it has to be encrypted or decrypted.
It's probably unnecessary.
Okay. All right, that's pretty helpful. Thank you very much for that information.
Sure.
Thank you for calling.
Yep. Thanks. Bye-bye. Yeah, often you get that. You're right. Many new drives offer you that opportunity.
Right.
So, well, the operating system gives you the opportunity.
That's true.
Fact.
Yes.
So, and like I said, if 99.999% of people won't really need that.
It's just one more thing to potentially make you sad later.
Right. But you're right. If you've already got a flash drive in your MacBook Air.
Yes.
And it starts to get 85, 90% full.
Yep.
It's going to slow down significantly. So moving off files that aren't used as often or are super large, you know, so many people nowadays are ripping DVDs.
Sure.
And things like that. You don't need that on your main drive.
Oh, yeah. Well, and where I work and what I've done over the last 20 years is help people figure out why the heck is my drive so full?
Right.
And you'd be amazed. It's that podcast that you subscribed to 3 years ago that's been dutifully downloading fresh episodes, but you've stopped listening to it 3 years ago and you forgot why.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Your hard drive's got, you know, 200 episodes of that from the last couple of years because those come out once a week. And it's got, you know, the movie of your niece that was from her third birthday that, you know, your brother sent you, and that's sitting in there, and you realize, oh, well, that's nice, but I don't really need a copy. I can get another copy from him if I need it.
Or you can just put it on a DVD or a flash drive.
Or upload it to Google Photos or whatever.
Whatever you want to do with it and get it off your drive.
Right. Or it's the cache files from all the updates that have been downloaded. We've seen all sorts of things, and figuring out what's going on is a great way to get started, and tools like Grand Perspective can really help do that.
Yep. All right. Before we get back to the phones, let me just say that tomorrow at 9 p.m. We will be holding the Soundbites Lounge. It's a video chat we do every Sunday at 9 p.m. and you get to it by going to soundbites.org/lounge. And at 9 o'clock, that link will be there, and you can join in the chat, and we'll be there for an hour, and you can ask any computer question you want. We're perfectly happy to answer.
And you're charging for this, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'm charging the same amount of money you pay to listen to this show.
Ooh, I thought it was going to be twice as much.
It was going to be twice as much, and I may still do that.
Okay.
I haven't really decided, but right now it costs as much as it costs to listen to this show.
Okay.
And we'll be doing that.
So
all right.
Be ready.
Yeah, back to the phones. Our next caller is Will from somewhere in Virginia. Where in Virginia, Will?
Hampton, Virginia.
Hampton, yeah. How are things down in Hampton?
Oh, today's not too bad. It did get a little bit chilly. I know it's much chillier up there, though, I'm guessing.
Yeah, don't talk to me about chilly.
Hey, we're still above freezing.
Yeah, we are that. What's up, Will?
Above freezing. Okay. It's actually, I have a two-parter. The first part is the ATX form factor. Will you ever see as many as 7 PCIe slots? And then the second part kind of has to do with it. I was reading somewhere that some 60% of form factors are disposable, quote, disposable, close quotes. And it has to do with the form factor that they're using, like small form factor or ultra form factor. And I was wondering about those two things.
Yeah, okay. So what Will is talking about is the form factor the is dimensions. The size yeah. of the motherboard in yeah. your device.
In inches or millimeters,
right,
that type of thing.
And ATX was one of those form factors. There are many of them. And so the question becomes twofold question. First, have you ever seen one with 7 PCIe slots? I have not.
I don't think
that
I have
either.
It
doesn't mean they exist. They don't exist, but I have not seen one.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't think so.
But there are motherboards that are specifically designed to take 7 or 8 video cards
right.
That are mostly being used to mine Bitcoin. So you may want to look at those specifically, particularly if that's your thing. They're probably not going to be cheap, but they're out there.
And then the second part of my question was I'd right. seen a statistic somewhere on the internet that some 60% of form factors fall in a quote disposable unquote category.
Yeah.
So like the parts on them are not upgradable, you mean?
Yeah, and not interchangeable or something like that. So I guess they're using like smaller than micro ATX casing, if that yep. is the case.
Here's the thing. They have discovered that the more stuff they solder onto the motherboard,
mm-hmm. the more reliable.
The more reliable yeah. the system is, the faster it is, and the cheaper it is to make. And so, and they love all three of those things. So they're doing that. In addition, the smaller they can make the motherboard, the fewer different designs they have to make. So, for example, if you make a Chromebook, well, no, Chromebooks would be slightly separate. But if you make a laptop in multiple sizes, 11-inch, 12-inch, 14-inch, 18-inch, and a desktop, but you have as much power in each of them, why not just make one form factor?
Right.
The 11-inch form factor.
Yeah.
Right. And so now it's in a big case. Who cares?
So you have a tiny little board in a much bigger case.
Right. It's economy of scale. It costs $100,000 to make the first one. It costs 18 cents to make the second one. Why would you make two different things at $100,000 each when you could just use the same set to make the second one
right.
at 18
so,
cents?
So are they disposable? Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably. They're not upgradable. That's true of almost every laptop nowadays.
Right.
Many of them, particularly in the Macintosh line, you can't even add or change
the RAM
anymore.
Or the storage.
Or the storage. Because it's cheaper for them to solder it all in at the beginning. So go ahead.
I got the impression that the micro ATX form factor struck a happy medium between all of those.
It used to. I honestly don't know that it still does.
You can usually get like M.2 slots on them for storage, so you can put in storage from third parties and expand that later on if you want to. Some of them still have SATA ports on them. I'm thinking about like the Dell microform factor machines that I've worked on.
Right.
Many of those have the ability to run multiple monitors right out of the box. They usually have DisplayPort or HDMI on them that you can back down to DVI or VGA if you need to. They're nice little units. Most of them have socketed RAM. So I wouldn't say that they're all disposable, but I would say, you know, do your research and you can find something that will work for you. In terms of is the processor going to be soldered on or not, these are all – luckily in the PC world, you've got that giant collection of vendors that it's very likely you'll find at least one device that meets your needs.
Right. If the larger the form factor, the more likely it is mm-hmm. to have replaceable right. and plug-inable
like,
bits.
Yeah, like right. ASUS.
But when you mm-hmm. get to the micros and the minis,
yeah.
The likelihood is that they're really something more akin to laptop motherboards.
Well, what we used to call the pizza box.
Yeah.
The pizza box motherboards.
And now hockey pucks. They're making them the size of yeah. of a Raspberry Pi.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can remember when we used to get the motherboards and you know, they'd come with the back, different back face plates
sure.
because of, you know, so many things were on the back of it. You know, you had the, US, the old, keyboard, connector.
Yep. Yes,
and then the, old USB, you know, PS2, mouse connector. Now those are gone. You used to have serial ports. Now that's gone. I mean, you know, they keep trimming them down more and more depending right. on what you're going
to
need.
Look, I'm old enough to remember backplanes.
Yeah.
All it was a rack that you plugged things into. You want a motherboard? You want a processor board? You plug that in. You want RAM? You plug that in. You want a keyboard connector? You plug that in. So you had 8 or 10 or 12 or however many slots in your backplane, and you could put anything you wanted in them. Nowadays, you get what you get because it's all soldered in.
Yeah.
But that's again, economy of scale. If they can make a billion of them for the cost of 1.4 of them,
yeah.
they will do that.
It's true.
So, but yeah, Will, you got to do your due diligence. Again, in right. general, the larger the board, the more likely it has replaceable parts.
One thing I noticed on the newer systems when you order them, you got to watch out for, is like from Dell and HP. They're not including CD-ROMs on them anymore.
No, they are not.
That's true.
Oh, that's an extra.
Nope, not anymore.
Yeah, unless... So, I mean, it was no big deal for me, you know, I said... Because I can just share one of the other machines.
Sure, sure.
The CD-ROM
Same
drive.
Same with DVDs.
Yeah. Move it on over and yep. copy it from there.
All right, did that answer your question, Will?
Yeah, it does. It all boils down to soldering and connections and
yep.
you know, economies of scale.
Yeah. You got it. Mm-hmm.
You got it.
Yep, that does. Thanks again, fellas.
All right, yeah. thanks, yep. Will. Have fun down there in Hampton. We hate you, just so you know.
Weatherwise only,
yes.
Thanks, Will.
Keep calling.
I have friends who live down that way and further south and they've been rubbing it in.
Yeah.
Not this last week. This week we had nice weather, but the week yeah. before, they were rubbing it in.
Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday were gorgeous.
Yeah, that's true.
Wednesday especially.
I went out on Wednesday and it was like, what? What happened?
Do I hear birds?
Why do birds suddenly
ping? You yeah. see all the geese heading north?
Yeah. Yeah, lots of geese.
Yeah, I like to see that. All right. We're going to love this. Google has called Tuesday, March 9th, the Chromebook's 10th anniversary.
Okay.
And the latest version of Chrome OS, version 89, is celebrating by rolling out a ton of features to the stable branch. First up is Phone Hub, which lets users pair up an Android phone and remotely control it via a little pop-up panel from the system tray. The panel shows phone status like battery and signal and control shortcuts for hotspot, silence, and locating your phone. It also shows your two most recent Chrome tabs on the phone. Notifications from your phone will be sent to Chrome OS, and you can even remotely reply to text messages from your Chromebook. Sharing between devices is also getting better. Chrome OS will now pull down your list of Wi-Fi passwords from an Android phone, so you'll only have to enter that super secret password once, and it'll be shared to your other Google OS devices. Google's AirDrop-style Nearby Share has been on Android phones since last year, and now Google says that in coming months, you'll be able to share between Chrome OS and Android. Chrome OS has a new tote section that shows recently created files. This lives in the system tray and similar to the phone and quick settings sections. And from the Files app, you can also pin important files to the Tote section for later. There's a new screen capture tool that drops files in the Tote section, too. You can take screenshots or videos, and the gallery tool has an annotate feature. So you can draw on the pictures. You can also take screenshots of just a part of the screen if you want to. It's great. A new feature seems ripped straight from Android, like the circular icon background for everything in a media player in the quick settings. Pressing the everything button, which is the Chrome's cap lock equivalent on older ones, it's a magnifying glass.
Right.
So that everything button plus V will bring up the new clipboard, which saves your last five copied items. You can right-click on a word to bring up quick answers, which will list the definition, translation, or unit conversion powered by Google Assistant. That's about it. Chrome OS is still a dead simple operating system, but there are some short and sweet additions. So what do you think of these additions to Chrome OS? Give us a call. 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Dennis Worcester, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. That would be Soundbites right here on member supported Jazz 90.1. See you in a couple of minutes.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Dennis Worcester.
And at 36 minutes after the hour, well, apparently we are soundbites.
Still.
It's unbelievable.
31 years and still doing it.
Still, it is unbelievable. Absolutely right. We had a text question.
Yep.
Dave?
Yep. What virus and malware should I use on Linux Mint Cinnamon? Thanks, Brent from Fairport. Member.
Unlike what many people will tell you, Linux is mildly susceptible. Every operating system.
Yeah.
Oh, sure.
Is susceptible to this stuff. Not terribly, but, you know, compared to Windows, nothing is terribly prevalent, but it is possible to get it. And I actually just posted on the website a link to that.
Okay.
It's called 3 Anti-Malware Solutions for Linux Systems. I run all three of them simultaneously. And they work great for me. One is called Check Rootkit, and it scans for rootkits.
Okay.
Shockingly, like the
sounds about right
thing says. And that's important. You should do that quite regularly. I add that to my cron jobs, and it runs there. Then RK Hunter, which is a rootkit hunter, and then also ClamAV, which is...
Oh, yeah.
It's an open source antivirus engine. Runs on every operating system.
That's been around for decades.
It has been around for decades, but it has it does email scanning, web scanning, endpoint security, bunch of utilities that work. I mean, it's kind of amazing. And it works really, really nicely. There are a couple of others. All of those are free, and all of those are part of almost every Linux distribution. There's also Sophos, which has a free for one user scan and remove malware.
Mm-hmm.
It's command line only, if you're at all familiar with that. There's a thing called Fire Tools, which is sandboxing software. And then there's an entire distribution called Qubes, Q-U-B-E-S, that's designed specifically to keep your computer as secure as possible. But in general, Check Rootkit, RK Hunter, and ClamAV will keep your machine clean.
Okay, and that's for Linux Mint Cinnamon.
But so it's for every Linux.
Okay, what about for Raspbian? If you've got a little Raspbian box,
that's a lovely question, and I have not checked, but I will when I get home.
It just occurred to me.
Yep, I have not checked to see what's available for that, but I suspect the same trio of software will
type
be available.
Of thing, yeah.
Right.
Now I would assume that running something like Sophos is probably not going to be available on Raspberry Pi. But if it's in your distribution, like in Raspbian OS, it will run and it will run well.
Okay.
And again, check Rootkit and RK Hunter and Clam AV. I'm sure Clam AV is in there. I think it put it on, but I don't remember about the other two.
But luckily, those systems don't come under attack as much as Macs and PCs right now.
Well, we'll see. As time goes on, right.
Well, I think where
you should be protecting them if you can.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Never, go without it. But I'm saying right now, those are the two high priorities, and I can see it going towards Chrome. Trying to attack Chrome, because Chrome is becoming more and more popular.
Yeah, well, especially now that Flash is...
Right. You mean the Chrome OS?
Yeah.
I agree.
And that's one nice thing, though. At least with the Chrome operating system, it will protect itself, that if something tries to change it, it compares it through that hidden file. If it's trying to alter anything in it, I know you're not doing it.
Right. In general, even if you get infected, rebooting it will be gone. It will be gone.
Yep.
So,
we saw that right here in the studio.
That was a fake one. It told me that my Windows system was infected.
Yeah, but still, in all, it was still an attack. And
right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jeffrey from Greece, New York. Hi, Jeffrey. What's up?
Hi there. Now that Google Cloud Print has stopped supporting printing, I've been trying to get my printers to go onto my Chromebooks. I have 3 Chromebooks, and I just cannot get the printers to be recognized in the Google Chrome setup.
Yep.
I did just buy a new Canon printer this week, and I'm adding it manually.
Yep.
And it just doesn't show up in the list of available print models. I did successfully install my brother laser printer, no problem. So that works great from the Google Chromebooks, but I can't get my Canon, which has color, to be recognized by Chrome. Just can't do it.
Yeah. So for the rest of you, you should know that Google has discontinued Google Cloud Print. And the reason they did that is because Google now uses cups underneath the
common Unix printing system.
Right, printing system. Can never remember what the C stands for.
That's right. I got you, Nick.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Common Unix printing system. And what that has been around for many decades. And it works with Linux and any variation of Unix. And, of course, Chromebooks is one of those. And so they've gone to that, which means you can now connect things directly, either directly with a wire or via the web, the internet, your home network. The problem is that it's still fairly new on Chromebooks and isn't necessarily working 100%. In addition, if you have an older Chromebook, it may not have the latest update. If your Chromebook has stopped receiving updates, it may not have gotten the one that fully supports cups printing. So, for example, on my Chromebook, when I first set it up, it was a brand new Chromebook. When I first set it up, I turned it on and I logged in, gave it the 5 minutes to go download all my pieces and parts. And then I went into printing to say, okay, I've got to set up my printer. And it was already there. It had gone out to the network, found my printer, installed the driver, worked great. But again, that was because it is the newest version of the operating system. Do you have the newest version of Chrome?
I don't know. I just got this Chromebook last August.
Okay, one way you can tell, it should be updating itself. But if you go down into the lower left and click on the time in the corner, you bring up that window, and there's a little gear icon near at the top right. And it's the settings. So you click on that, and it brings up a window, and it's called settings. And down at the lower left is a link called About Chrome OS.
Yep, I got it.
When you click
Yep, 88.0.4224.
Yeah, you should, if it says check for updates, do that.
Yep, just did it.
And is it updating?
Yes.
Okay. Once you have 89, which is the newest one, reboot and give it a couple of give it a few minutes.
Okay.
And see if it finds it. If not, then you'll need to go into looking for your printers and do it that way. But in general, that would be under connected devices. So should be able to find, or all you do is really you can go into search settings and find your printer there. Under printers, good. You should see your various printers. If you then click add printer, what it will do is let you add a printer, or you can add a print server, or you can add a printer directly, if it did not find them automatically.
Okay. I did notice when I set up the Brother printer manually on one Chromebook.
Yeah.
I went to the other two Chromebooks that I have. And it was already there.
Yes, they will share that information to each other, yes.
Okay, so I'll just do it on this one. Hopefully it will go to the other ones automatically. Perfect.
Right. At the very least, what you have to do is to go to your printer and find out its IP address.
Yep, I already got that. Yeah.
Okay, then you're on your way.
Okay. Perfect. All right, but it's only, it's still updated. It's 100%.
Yeah, but it'll take a while, and then it'll ask you to restart, and then you're on your way.
Okay, perfect. Okay, thank you very much. Love the show.
Thank you. Have fun.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Yeah, what Google used to do is, because they had no real printing solution, they created Cloud Print, which let you, just what it says, you print to the cloud, and the cloud then prints to your printer.
Right.
It is much better for them to be using cups. It is a tried and true, long proven solution, and there's a whole bunch of people out there in the internet updating it all the time.
It's true.
For the various latest printers. So it's a lot easier to use cups than it is to do anything else. But what that means is you have to be running at least one of the last couple of versions.
Right.
In order to do that.
So if you've got a older printer that still has the Google Cloud Print as an option, it sounds like that's worth disabling. It's not going to work.
It's not
going
to work anymore. That's exactly right. Okay. In fact, I have that on my Brother printer.
Yeah, I was thinking of my Brother printer at home that has that available to it.
And I turned it off.
And my kids have Chromebooks.
Didn't do a thing, right. Although this is the only thing I print all week long.
Yeah.
Well, I just printed out some forms to send in. I went to the unclaimed funds.
Yes.
New York State unclaimed funds.
I just went there this week. Nothing for me, but something for one of my friends.
I had several things. I had several things. One of them, it said that I needed to provide a death certificate for the person who owned the funds.
Okay.
I'm the person who owned the funds.
Oh.
I'm not entirely sure what to do at this point.
Yeah. If you've got your death certificate, just for the fun of it, check and see what the date is.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say.
You just fill that in, or...
Yeah, right.
You have birth certificate. Well,
they already know. I don't know how that works.
I was going to say, you haven't ticked off your wife lately, have you?
Oh, yes, I have, but that's a separate issue. I'm saving
Sleep
that one for
with
her.
One eye open.
Yeah, exactly right. So I will be figuring that out at some point.
Yes. Well, we should tell our listeners how to get to this, because there's a possibility that if you are listening to us, and I think every state has their own website for this type of thing.
Yeah.
But if you are in New York State, which is where we broadcast from, New York State has I think the phrase you should search for is unclaimed funds, New York State, or NYS. And that will take you to a place where you can type in your name and I think either your city or something similar, and see if there's a company that may have gone under, or there's a bank account that got closed, or something else.
A refund check or something.
Right. Some other balance that you have that the state would really love for you to have it, and will happily mail you a check as long as you can prove you're you. they'll make that happen. I had, I think, about $80 come to me at one point from, they told me it was from Google because I had bought a bunch of advertising dollars from them, and I only ended up using part of them, and I had completely forgotten about it and went to that page several years ago now, and within a few weeks, I had a check right in my mailbox.
Right.
So, and there are lots and lots of people in the Finger Lakes area because you can search, see how many people there are and how many dollars total. And it's well over $1 million just here in the Finger Lakes area for that they'd love to give back to people.
I have posted a link on our website. Again, the first link down is about you don't have enough backups. The second link is the Soundbites Lounge. And underneath that are the current ones for this show, which are New York State Unclaimed Funds, Three Anti-Malware Solutions for Linux Systems, and Microsoft Publishes Workaround for Printing Blue Screen Issue in Windows.
And if you find it, you get a couple of bucks back.
Send it to us.
Yeah.
Share it
get,
with
get
us.
Get yourself a nice membership to Jazz 90.1.
Exactly.
Why not?
Share the wealth.
That is exactly
spread
right.
Spread it around a little.
We have, oh, I don't need that open anymore. We have been very lucky. But yeah, I did have a couple, and we'll see what happens. I don't know how much they are yet.
Yeah, it's you never it's like Santa coming. Yeah, you have no idea.
Right, exactly.
They spent 40 cents to mail you 18 cents.
Right. On the other hand, hopefully there'll be a comma in the number, and that'll be even better.
That'll be something.
Maybe two commas. That would be great.
Yeah, but also watch out for the scams too. I mean, some of these folks will get the. You know, and it's happened before. They'll get the emails that you've got money coming to you, and, oh, you got to first pay us, you know, a fee up front to claim it.
Right, so they're like the middleman that's going to that website on your behalf.
Yeah, no, that's a scam.
You can go to the site that I posted. That is a New York State government site.
Right. Don't go for these.
Right, don't go for the scams.
Yeah.
All right, we should probably talk about the iPhone 12.
Okay.
The iPhone 12 mini.
Yes, I have one here.
Apple is cutting orders for all iPhone by around 20% compared to its plans for December, with the iPhone 12 mini making up the majority of the cutback. In line with previous reports, the production claims that the publication claims are that demand for the iPhone 12 mini has been far lower than Apple initially expected. There's a report that Apple initially aimed to secure components for up to 96 million iPhones for the first half of 2021, including the entire iPhone 12 lineup and older models like the iPhone 11 and the iPhone SE, but the company is apparently now targeting production at around 75 million units. That's still slightly higher than iPhone shipments in the same period last year, so let's not start listening to the doomsayers just yet.
Right, of course, they went from, what, 90-something million to 70-something million?
Yeah, 96 million to 75 million.
Oh, no.
And, of course, when you add that to the fact that Apple just killed the iMac Pro, who knows?
Yes.
iPhone 12 mini demand has been so lackluster that I think you bought the only one. That Apple even asked some suppliers to temporarily stop building components specifically for it. Some of the components and parts for the iPhone 12 mini have been reallocated to the iPhone 12 Pro and iPhone 12 Pro Max, a source said. Apple is still believed to be seeing healthy demand for its three higher-end iPhone 12 models, with strong sales of the device helping to contribute to Apple's record-breaking $111.4 billion revenue reported in the December quarter. $111 billion per quarter.
In 3 months.
Yeah. While demand for the iPhone 12 mini may be lower than Apple initially expected, the company is still expected to release a so-called iPhone 13 mini this year. So what size phone do you prefer? Unfortunately, it's a little too late to give us a call, so we won't ask you to do that.
Yeah,
but I'll say that I prefer a phone where I can hold it in one hand and use my thumb to tap anywhere on the glass, which is all with one hand. That's what I like.
And I prefer a phone that's so big I can actually see it.
Well, what we've been saying, though, is where a lot of the manufacturers are missing the boat. And I don't care whether it's Mac, Android, or whatever phone you want. They keep trying to go smaller, smaller, smaller. Well, if they went just a couple millimeters thicker and added more battery life, I guarantee you that would sell far more phones when you could sit there and tout, oh, this phone will last you 2 days.
Right.
Or, you know, a full day, and that's watching movies and talking to friends and being on the phone and surfing and everything. And, you know, and advertise, oh, and look, it's still got most of its charge, or, you know, at least half the charge. that would do more sales right now as a feature.
The problem with that is twofold. One, they're expensive. More battery is expensive.
Sure.
And two, smaller is better. And I blame Apple for all of that. Smaller and thinner is better.
Phones kept getting smaller and smaller and smaller until somebody put a touchscreen on them, and then suddenly they got bigger and bigger and bigger.
Right. But there are a number of lesser-known manufacturers that have 7,000 milliamp hour batteries and larger.
Oh, sure.
But they're lesser-known manufacturers,
it's
and they
niche.
Don't sell tremendously well.
Yeah.
And so the bigger manufacturers look at that and say, well, see, big batteries didn't help them. Well, nobody's heard of them, and they only sell in India or, you know, whatever.
Right.
So, but yeah, I would love to see more stuff, but I don't know
maybe
if that's ever going to happen. All right, that music tells us we are done for another week. 2 hours just flew by. I want to thank Dave Enright. I specifically want to thank Dennis Worster, who
happy
was
to be here.
Kind enough to join us as Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Southwest.
And I'll be here again next week.
We cannot wait.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to, but we don't want to. but that's it for another week. Remember to join us tomorrow night in the Soundbites Lounge. And we will be here next week with a whole lot more of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites right here on the truly great and truly grateful to you that we are member supported Jazz 90.1. It's 55 minutes after the hour, and we will see you in just 166 hours. Be good to one another, would you?